you get an image from, like, the movie industry that the 50s were almost a golden fairy tale period of time. Was that, in fact, how it was? The kids and the cars and hamburger places? And I mean, was that actually...
Well, it was, from the standpoint, I don't know if you could call it a fairy land or a fairy existence, but there were a number of new things that were coming into play that we had never seen before. I can remember the emergence when I was a teenager of the first McDonald's restaurant in our neighborhood, which was one of the first around the city of Atlanta. And they went out and on a weekly basis changed by hand the numbers that you now see flip up there. You know, the billions that you see now were down in the thousands. And the kids were able to, because of the war being over and so forth, were able to have the cars and you know, souping their cars up and putting foxtails on them and things like that was a big deal. And they do the same things they do today by cruising the fast food joints and so forth. So there was a sense of, I guess, a sense of freedom. The other thing that really impacted during that period of time was the emergence of rock and roll music, so designated by a guy named Alan Freed. And Elvis Presley gets a lot of credit for being the father, if you will, of rock and roll. So, and that was the first major emergence of black or African American music into the white culture. And by television and by the recordings, white kids became familiar with the African American or black groups that were playing then. These were things that had been going on for numbers of years in their society, but we just had not had any benefit of seeing it until then. So that was something that was a whole new cultural aspect. And yes, I used to watch Dick Clark back in those days, and he's still around doing the same thing he did then. And I remember, you know, people like Paul Anka and Annette Funicello was just a little bitty kid when I was growing up too. So it was a time of a great emergence of new types of music and those kinds of things. We did not face a number of social problems to the extent that you do today with the massive problems with drugs and alcohol and things of that nature. So it was a much quieter, much safer time. I remember very vividly people in my neighborhood leaving their doors and windows open and even going away to the grocery store or being gone overnight with no particular concern that somebody was going to come in and rob anything from. And things have dramatically changed from that time to today.
Was there a greater sense of family, the family unit being more important, and, you know, more traditional, what you would call traditional American values? Do you feel like we've moved more away from that, and maybe that was the last real period of time where that existed?
Without question. I think that in my mind, again, now looking back, that the real demarcation point on that was 1964 with the challenge for taking what effectively took religion out of schools. And I think that from that point forward, we've seen a dramatic digression from discipline and from family values and the things that made the country strong and great in the past. And it's very difficult for people in this day and time to even reflect back on those times when you could do the kind of things that we did in the schools and have them accepted. So yes, I think the moral values have dramatically shifted to the detriment of the country, and that has been to a large extent continued by the types of music and things of that nature that young folks today are subjected to on a daily basis that we were not. And I do think there is a greater much greater sense of family and family unity and concern for the family during the time when I was a teenager than there is today.
You mentioned the influence of African American culture into the white culture. What were your feelings about segregation, particularly in the South at that time? And as you watched it on TV, what was the feeling of the people that you lived with?
Well, my recollections as a youth about things related to segregation were going to bus stations or train terminals and seeing one water fountain that said white and another one that said colored, and seeing one restroom that said white and another one colored. I remember going into restaurants and knowing that black people were excluded from restaurants and theaters and most other places that white people were allowed to go. And this was most visible to me coming into teen years, going to downtown in the city of Atlanta and seeing black people forced to go to the back of buses. Until the time that the civil rights movement started and Rosa Parks made her stand in Montgomery, there really was not any visible showing of anger, or very little. At least I never saw any. I mean, you could. I was not perceptive enough then to sense it, but I'm sure it was there—the anger and the animosity and the lack of understanding about, you know, how could you tell your child that he was not as good as another child, or that he couldn't sit in the front of the bus. Or it was a very difficult time for them to deal with, and it was a time that we had a lot of trouble understanding, and we of course stereotyped from our parents and others that were around us, although my parents never exhibited any kind of animosity or anger towards other cultures. I could sense that in people that I was around and other actions. And then during the times of the civil rights movements and the mass marches and the sit-ins and those kinds of things, there was a tremendous amount of upheaval in the country, and a tremendous amount of anger was vented on both sides as blacks struggled to get civil rights, and I think whites were more trying to understand what it was that was happening to them than necessarily they were fighting it. They didn't really know what was going on. So it was a very, very unsettled period of time in the early parts of the civil rights movement.
Before the civil rights movement actually started, for you personally, was that just the way it was to you, or did you ever stop and think about blacks and whites being separated? I mean, was it ever something you consciously thought, or was it just you were in the South and that's just the way it was?
Well, you've got to understand it was not only
in
the South.
Well, I know it wasn't only in the South, but it was...
The focus, the historical focus has been on the South. The racial tension and the lack of civil rights obedience has been historic in the country in various sundry ways, and of course continues today. But no, I really did not give it a conscious thought in the respect of whether it was right or wrong. It was just something that was there. And during the early periods of time, I was too young really to accept anything other than the fact that they were a different color than I was, and that they had to use different accommodations above and beyond that. I had, you know, probably just usual childlike recollections of it. As far as having any kind of animosity or really any kind of dealings with any other culture, I really didn't. So there was no... It was not a hate factor. It was just something I really didn't give any particular concern to.
When the actual civil rights movement started, what was the relationship between the average black and white man on the street as they passed by? I mean, was there a tension that arose out of that was more noticeable than?
Yeah, there was an awful lot of tension. In the sense that you would find people walking five abreast down a sidewalk just for the pure purpose of making somebody else walk off of the sidewalk into the street to get around them. And this was black and white. It had no, there was no color designation in that. You found many You found many demonstrations. Most all of them were peaceful until somebody made a bad mistake, and you found peaceful marches and picketing outside of restaurants, for example. And there were always dissident groups who were yelling at bad things back and forth, and the occasional cross burnings by the Ku Klux Klan and things of that nature, which led to an awful lot of tension, very, very much tension.
Did this add to a new or an awareness of a danger in society that hadn't been there before? Like, people were more aware of locking their doors and being more cautious when they went out at night, or that kind of thing?
I think that may have been to some extent, but you've got to also realize that during that time period, we still didn't see the cross-pollination of the races in the way that we do now. And what I mean by that is that there still were no major integrations of neighborhoods. There still were no real major integrations of movie theaters or restaurants and those kind of things. So basically, you would see things going on during the daytime, and then people went back to their homes at night, and there was not massive civil disobedience on a nightly basis in different neighborhoods. So that had not really come to the point where people had to deal cross-culturally with each other, except in the more or less, say, many times staged confrontation periods like picketing a restaurant or something like that.
Where were you in your schooling when they started integrating blacks into the school system?
Well, at that time, I had been in school for a couple of years and was working at that period of time. I was working for Delta Airlines at that particular period of time when the first of the civil rights movement started. I was also still had a military affiliation, and at that point I was in the Army National Guard in Georgia, and we had the unit I was in was a military police unit, and we had the first two black military policemen, the first black National Guardsmen in the state of Georgia. They integrated into to our particular unit, and they were both Atlanta policemen, one of whom was the current police chief of the city of Atlanta, Elvin Bell.
What was that like to watch something like that? How did people seem to react to have black integrated like that?
It was a very, again, a tense time, because even like today, we have many people who refuse to accept that civil rights are for everybody. That's what they mean. It's part of life today, and it's something we have to recognize is there. And there's those kinds of attitudes for many die hard. There was a period of tension in our unit, but we brought these guys in, and they just became part of it, because at that point we were very heavily involved in gaining riot control training and things of that nature that would have prepared us to go and defend the citizens of Atlanta, both black and white, for any point of civil disobedience, which was part of our job.
When you watch documentaries on TV about, you know, the first time that black children ever entered the white school system, at times it seems so riotous and, you know, even violent. Is that actually how it felt to you at that time, or
well,
isolated?
It was not so much isolated. It was just that it was not directly where we lived. Much of that activity took place in Alabama, and when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, or even into my early 20s, Alabama could have been on the moon as far as I was concerned from a cultural standpoint. So you could see the TV reports, but it just didn't, it was almost like it was not happening anywhere close enough to me to be terribly concerned about.